Well, thank you for reading that passage. As you can see, why I didn't want to read it myself, because it is a very complex passage. We're going, for those of you who are new or visiting, we're going through the book of Hebrews here in the 11 o'clock service. And Hebrews isn't the most accessible book that's out there. It has a lot of knowledge of the Old Testament required, so it's not the most accessible book, but there are some parts of it that are easier than others. And today, we're not going to be going over one of those easier than other passages. In fact, this is one of the most difficult passages, and I'm really actually happy that my boss is here, because he said, Tim, I'll stop saying that. He's my colleague. Anyway, he said, Tim, you know, I really want you to teach on something incredibly complex. In fact, I won't even bring my family here unless you teach on something that's way over everybody's heads. So guess what, Damon? We're doing that today. Yeah. Okay, so everybody put on your thinking caps, because this is a really complex passage if we have no exposure to what went on in the Old Testament, and if we have no idea what's going on in the book of Hebrews. So we are going to get into some nitty-gritty that might be hard for you to precisely comprehend, but the main point that the author of the book of Hebrews is trying to make here is actually a very, very simple one. And it's what hopefully is going to come out. And the main point that the author is trying to make in these passages or in these verses is that a person is always better than a picture. A person is always better in a picture. And you know what? Sometimes in our religious practice, in our Christianity, we can substitute a picture of God for the person of God, for Christ himself. And we ought not do that. And this book in the New Testament, which was written to the Hebrew, the Jewish Christians, they were having some struggle and tension on that. And the author's going to show them how they ought not to do that. My wife and I were watching very briefly this week part of a documentary on the life of John James Audubon. Y'all heard of him? John James, he's, you know, the painter of birds. Yeah, painted birds. And as we were watching this, I realized that this would make a good illustration for the main point that the author in this passage is trying to make. Audubon left his wife and kids for 7 months to float down the Mississippi River and paint pictures of birds. And what would you feel if the following... Now that's true. Here's now my made-up story in relation to that. What would you think about Mrs. Audubon if the following happened? So John James is getting ready to leave, and he says, darling, I know you're going to miss me for the next 7 months, so here, guess what I've done for you? I've painted a picture of myself, okay? I've painted a picture of myself. Here's a picture so that when I'm gone for 7 months and you're lonely, you're sad, you're wondering if I still remember you, you're wondering what I look like and who I am, look at this picture. And you can be reminded of who I am, and that I do love you, and that I am coming back. And so he leaves, and what does Mrs. Audubon do? Well, she looks at the picture, and then when she goes to bed that first night, where does she put the picture? On her pillow, or on his pillow. Yeah, his pillow, right next to her. So she falls asleep, looking until the candle dies, looking at the picture of him. And she does that every single night for 7 months. Then 7 months later, he comes back. And as he's getting ready to hop in bed that night, he notices there's something on his pillow. And so he looks, and oh, it's the picture of him. So what does he do? Well, he picks it up to put it on the nightstand so that he can put his head down there. And what does Mrs. Audubon do? Wait, John James. What are you doing moving the picture? And he said, well, why do you want the picture? And she said, well, that picture is very meaningful to me. I love that picture. That picture has, no, don't move the picture. And he says, but wait, hold on a second. I'm here. I'm the person. I'm better than the picture. Now, would we say she has a problem psychologically if she still kicked him out of bed? Yeah. And maybe it was brought on by the fact he left her for 7 months and he deserved it. It was her way of getting back. But nonetheless, that is what's going on in this passage. In this passage, the author is saying specifically to the Hebrew Christians, the Jewish Christians that this book is written to, hey, you know what? Back in the Old Testament, God painted a wonderful picture of who he is for you. And that picture was two parts, the priesthood and the law. The priesthood and the law. And they show you a great deal of who God is and what he wants from you and how to interact with him. But now, today, the real person has come. Not the picture, the real person, Jesus Christ, that all these pictures were looking forward to. And now, though that picture, those Old Testament laws and priesthood and regulations, though they meant a lot to you, they're not as good as the real person, Jesus Christ. And we need to make sure we focus on him and not on the picture. That makes sense? So that's the main point of this passage. I could essentially stop now because that's the easily understandable version of it, but we're going to whiz through the passage so that we can see that I'm not just making this up, but this is actually what the author is saying. So Obi, next slide, please. Here's what we're going to talk about. The author's going to do two things. He's going to say, number one, you know what? A picture priest versus a person priest. I'm going to showcase to you why the person priest, Jesus Christ, is better than the Old Testament Levitical priest. Then, the picture law. There's a type of law in the Old Testament that's a picture of who God is and how to interact with him, but it's not the real person. And I'm going to show you how the person law is better. And then finally, we have two applications at the end, and we're el dono, okay? So that's where we're going. Let's start going there by next slide. I'm just trying to get you ready for Mexico, Matt. Okay. So, number one, why is the person priest better than the picture priest? We're going to compare and contrast picture priest and person priest. Notice what he says in verse 11. I don't have the, look in your Bibles because I don't have the text up there. Now, if perfection had been attained through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need would there have been for another priest to arise after the order of Melchizedek rather than one named after Aaron? For when there is a change in the priesthood, there's necessarily a change in the law. What he is saying there is, Levitical priesthood, as we all know, this is the Old Testament priests. There is now a new priest who has arisen. And he's going to give us a general argument and a couple specific arguments as to how this new priest is better than the old priest. Now, let me just first really quickly ask you the question. Why was there a priest in the Old Testament? What did Old Testament priests do with the Jewish nation? Anyone know? Yeah. Wow. What was your name? Celeste, like, oh, perfect. Okay, you all heard that. That's exactly what they did. The purpose of a priest was what? To join mankind and God. To bridge a gap between humanity and divinity. Because way back at the fall, when man had said, I don't want you to be my God, and had rebelled, eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the fruit, man was separated from God. Sin had separated us. We had declared war against God. And whenever there's war, there's what? Death. And is death separation? Yes, death is separation. And so we were separated from God. And we need someone to take that death away and give us life once again with God. And the Old Testament priest would symbolically do that through, as Celeste said, offering sacrifices. Now, did these sacrifices really give life to the people and wash away their sin? No, they didn't. But they were a picture of someone who truly would do that. And that's what we're going to see. So these Old Testament priests, the first general argument was, is they're not as good. They're not as good because, and I'm not going to go into all the detail of this, but they're after the order of Aaron as opposed to the new priest. Jesus himself is after the order of Melchizedek. I'm going to leave it at that. We've talked about that in the past parts of the book. If you're curious as to what that means, come talk to me after the service, but I'm not going to belabor that point. But what goes on then are some specific reasons as to why Jesus Christ is a better high priest, the perfect person, the God-man, to make us connected with God. Here's what we read in verse 16, drop down. Jesus was a priest not on the basis of a legal requirement concerning bodily descent, but by the power of an indestructible life. What's he saying here? Here's the first specific reason as to why Jesus is a better priest for us than the Old Testament priest. He said, Jesus isn't a hereditary priest. In the Old Testament, if you were of the tribe of Levi, you were automatically a priest. But have you all ever read, how many of you like history? Okay, a few of you. Have you ever noticed that in reading in the kings and queens of England, sometimes because of laws of heredity, the best person for the job doesn't get chosen? Yeah, you know that? I was just reading about King George III and King George IV. Y'all know who King George III is? Yeah, the king during the American Revolution, right? Was he a good king or a bad king? Anyway. He was actually, now we Americans don't think he was a very good king, but he actually was a really good king. Did you know he was a compassionate king? He was very compassionate. He was very kind. He was very concerned. He actually viewed the American colonies quite favorably, and he thought, I'm the best thing for you. Why don't you want me? Because I really want your good. But things got all messed up, but and he got dementia at the end of his life. So anyway, he was still overall a good king, but his son, King George IV, was he a good king? And Elizabeth is saying no, no. He was a flake, El Flaco. Yeah, really, really bad guy. Just horrible. Nobody liked him whatsoever. And I just read this week an obituary written by a London paper on him. Here's what the obituary was. There never was an individual less regretted by his fellow creatures than this deceased king. Okay, so was King George IV the best man for the job? No, he was a hereditary priest like the Levitical priests in the Old Testament. But the author is here saying Jesus is not our high priest because of bodily legal descent. He's not a hereditary priest. No, he's the best person for the job of uniting us with God the Father. Number two, he also says in verse 20 and 22 that he wasn't a hereditary priest, he's best man for the job, but he's also confirmed with an oath. Notice verse 20. For those who formerly became priests were made such without an oath, but this one, Jesus, was made a priest with an oath by the one who said, "The Lord has sworn." So the Old Testament priests, they didn't swear an oath. New Testament Jesus, there was an oath sworn by God the Father that I am putting my reputation on the line that Jesus Christ is the best and only high priest. God swore that with an oath. Is that very, very important? And is that strong affirmation of Jesus Christ being a priest on our behalf to join us to God? Absolutely. Far better than the Old Testament priest. I'm not going to read the remainder of the chapter, but because it's not my section. Whoever's preaching on this next week can elaborate. But in verse 24, we also read that Jesus is better than Old Testament priest because he's eternal, meaning he's not going to die on us. In fact, the passage says he ever lives to make intercession for us, even now in heaven. And verse 26 says he's holy, innocent, unstained, separated from sinners, exalted above the heavens. And verse 28 says he's God's son. So again, what's the purpose of a priest? To bring us to God? Who better to bring us to a king than the king's own son? The king's own son. If we want to have access to the new King Charles III, what's the best way to do it? Go up and say, hey, Prince William, you like me, I like you. Let me introduce my, will you please introduce me to your dad? So, these are the specific reasons as to why, in this passage, Jesus is a better high priest than the picture priest, the Old Testament priests. Everybody understand and see that? Okay, that's what point one in this passage is. Point two, next slide. Point two is that there was, along with these picture priests in the Old Testament, there were also picture laws. And these picture laws are not as good as the person law which Jesus brings us. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, first off, we just have to do a little bit of exploration regarding the types of laws in the Old Testament. And here's where we wade into some stuff that's not all that exciting, so I'll try to make it fast. When we hear today this term law, we think of what? The Ten Commandments. We think of the Ten Commandments, but there are actually many, 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 many other types of laws in the Old Testament, are there not? There are many. And there are three categories, and it's very, very important to understand this. In fact, sometimes, every now and then, I had a student a few years ago. He wanted to know about Christianity. He came and talked to me. He said, you know, the only thing about Christianity that I don't like is there are all these stupid laws. And I said, oh, like what? And he said, well, like, you know, you can't have garments with two different types of materials, and you have to eat certain types of foods, and then all this stuff with sacrificing animals. I love animals. That just, doesn't make sense. Yeah. The Bible's old and outdated. And so I told him, very good point, Ryan. But you know what? Those laws that you just highlighted are not laws that the Bible itself says we should be following today, because there are three types of laws in the Old Testament for the Jewish nation. There are, number one, civil laws, number two, ceremonial laws, and number three, moral laws. And this picture law that the passage is saying has been replaced, is going away with, is one of those three. So let me just quick tell you what those three are, and then we'll figure out which is the one that is disappearing and going away according to this passage. So the civil laws were laws regarding Jewish government, the governing of the Jewish nation. Do we have civil laws today? Yeah, we do. Like, you have to drive on what side of the street here in America? The right side of the street. Compared to in England, we drive on the... Nice. Spoken from a truly American perspective, yeah. Okay, so anyway, there were laws like that for Old Testament Israel. You had to drive your chariot on one side of the road versus the other side of the road. These are the civil laws. Are these the laws that are being talked about in this passage? Well, we'll see in just a moment. Then there were ceremonial laws. And the ceremonial laws were laws that were symbols or pictures of spiritual realities. They're the foods, the feasts, the festivals. They're the animal sacrifices that the nation of Israel, through their Levitical priests, practiced. Those are the ceremonial laws. And then the last category of law is the moral law. The moral law. And what are moral laws? Moral laws are laws that are a reflection of God's character. Moral laws are laws that show us who God is. And so when someone comes up to Jesus in the New Testament and says, what's the greatest of all the laws? What's Jesus' response? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. What's the heart of that commandment? Love. Now, is God love? Yes. God is, that's his character. It's not just a characteristic of God. No, God is love.
And so the moral law says you will most be fulfilled as a human created in God's image the closer you get to who he is and how he acts. And he is love, and he acts in a loving manner. So moral law, you need to do that as well. It's for your good. It's how you operate because it's how God operates. That's the moral law. And so as we can see, if we're all made in God's image, all humans, is the moral law applicable across all history and all ethnic groups? Absolutely, because we all humans are made in his image. So those are the three types of laws. Now, what kind of law is this picture law, which our passage says is going away, is being put away? Well, let's look. There are a couple clues in the passage as to whether or not it's civil, ceremonial, or moral. First off, look at verse 12. Verse 11 and 12 show that this law is tied to the Levitical priesthood. It says, through the Levitical priesthood, the people receive the law. In verse 12, if there's a change in priesthood, there's a change in the law. So this law is changed, this picture law, which the passage says is going away, it's tied to the work of the priests. Now, were the priests in Old Testament Israel the ones who ran the civil government? No, they weren't. They weren't. So if this law that goes away is tied to the priests, well, it's clearly not the civil law. So boom, this isn't the civil law. Then we next have another clue in verse 18. For we read in verse 18, the former commandment or law is set aside because of its weakness and uselessness. For the law made nothing perfect. So we have moral and ceremonial left. And the passage is telling us this one that's set aside, it was weak, it was useless, and it doesn't make anything perfect. Does that sound like the moral law? Is the moral law, which conforms us to the image of God, weak? Is it useless to be like God? No. And it doesn't make us perfect. We move toward perfection the more we're like God in following his moral law. So clearly, this law can't be the moral law, so what law does it have to be that the passage says is being set aside? Ceremonial. Very good. The ceremonial law. And indeed, we see this reinforced in the New Testament multiple times. You guys all remember when Jesus was in the temple and he told all of the folks around him, tear down this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it again. Remember that statement? And everybody thought that was what? Just crazy and stupid. And well, what was Jesus talking about? He was laying the foundation for this setting aside of the ceremonial law of the picture and for the real person to be at the center of things. Because the temple, tear down this temple, it was the center of Jewish ceremonial law life. And he is telling them, that's just a picture of me. Those sacrifices are just a picture. They can't make you right and perfect with God. But no, I, who am going to rise again on the third day, I can. Look to me. You don't need this anymore because I, the person, am better than the picture. And that's why in Hebrews we read, for since the ceremonial law was but a shadow or a picture of the good things to come instead of the true form, the person, Jesus, it's completely unable to perfect those who come to worship. It's unable to do it. So Colossians 2, food, drink, or matters of a feast, new moon, or Sabbath, these are only a shadow, a picture of things to come, but the reality is Christ. So do we see the difference between the picture law and the person law that's being highlighted in this passage? Well, with that said, let's conclude now by drawing a couple applications. Next slide, please, Obi, thank you. A couple applications for ourselves, and then we're done. So, question for us today is, what are we serving and following? Are we focusing on pictures, or are we focusing on the person of Jesus Christ? What are we focusing on? There are Old Testament pictures that can be pretty cool and that we might really enjoy focusing on. And I'm not going to say it's wrong necessarily to, but it shouldn't be our primary focus. You know, have any of you, for example, gone to a Passover Seder? I know I have, and I really enjoy them. And it's a really, really cool picture. But is it the person of Jesus? No. Some of the foods, feasts, and festivals, they're good pictures of Jesus, but are they actually the person of Jesus? They're not the actual person of Jesus. And frequently, when we do, maybe we like the foods, the festivals, and the feasts, but do we really actually get a true picture just through those of fundamentally who Jesus was? Well, to do that, we'd also have to engage in the what? Animal sacrifices. And we don't want to go that far, but is that a very, very important part of who Christ is? That he sacrificed himself on our behalf. Incredibly important. And yet, we don't do that, but we have the foods, festivals, and the feasts, and so are we getting a true picture of Jesus? Maybe not. So we need to be careful that we don't focus too much on these Old Testament pictures and forget that Mr. Audubon is here in our midst. Okay? So that's Old Testament pictures we might focus on a bit too much. And then what about us here in the modern time? I mean, I know for many of us, all of this arcane language regarding the Old Testament and the priests, it's sort of a little bit foggy, but what about today? Is there a way today that we can focus on some sort of a picture, figurative picture of God, without actually interacting with Christ himself? And I think there is. There are actually many. Think through it yourself this week. How might you be focusing on pictures rather than on Christ? But the only one I'm going to mention is one that just came up this week. I was talking to a pastor, and he had said, you know what's really interesting? When I go on a pastoral visit, and I ask someone, you know, how's your relationship with Christ? How are things between you and Christ? He said, very frequently, people respond in the following manner. Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, I've been reading my Bible 5-6 times a week. I've been going to church maybe 3 out of every 4 Sundays in the month. Yeah, pretty good relationship with Christ. Now, is that an answer that is denominated in terms of pictures or persons? Is the Bible a good picture that shows us Jesus Christ? Yes. But is the Bible itself actually Jesus Christ? No. Is the church, us together here, we're Christ's body, we're a representation, a good picture of him in our, here on earth, but are we actually Jesus Christ? No, we're not actually Jesus Christ. And so, do we sometimes, in going into the mechanics of our religious life, wind up focusing more on the mechanics without cultivating the relationship with Jesus? I think we can. In closing, I'm going to tell you a story. It's not my own. Charles Price up in Toronto gave this one, and it was a really great illustration, I thought, of this point that really, really convicted me. He said, I just bought a new car. I just bought a new car, and I brought it home, put it in the garage, and before I went in for the evening, I pulled out of the glove box the what? Instruction manual. And so after dinner, I got down on my chair, and I opened up this instruction manual, and I started reading it, and And he said, I started to realize to myself, this instruction manual is really good. I mean, this is a very interesting instruction manual. He said, I almost read through the entire instruction manual that night. And the next day, I called up a few of my friends who had the same car, and I said, hey, have you guys taken a look at this instruction manual? Yeah? Have you really studied it? No? Well, come on over to my house this week. Let's start studying the instruction manual together. So the friends come over, And we all start in studying the instruction manual together. And various of us are moved by particular passages in the instruction manual. And some of us say, man, that paragraph is so good, I'm going to memorize it. And so we memorize it. And then, so that we can remember longer passages, we put some music to some of the paragraphs, some of the very poetical portions of the instruction manual. And we say, hey, when we get together, let's sing these passages to one another just to encourage in ourselves in the wonder of this instruction manual. And then one of us said, you know what? I want to learn the instruction manual in the original language. And so we went and learned Japanese so that we could read the instruction manual in the original languages. Yeah. And he said, what if I told you I was doing all of that, but not once in the entire time had I gone out into the garage, put the key in the car, and driven my car? I knew everything about my car from a picture perspective, but did I personally know it? Did I personally interact with it? Did I viscerally, in my heart, mind, and soul, know this car? And the answer is no. Can all of us do that sometimes in our lives? We just on autopilot go through our religious activities, but are we really driving the most perfect person? Are we driving with Christ? That's the question for us. Let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for giving us not just great pictures of Christ, but his actual person, your Son, who wants to bring us to yourself, who died so that we might be made right. Oh Lord, we love you. We thank you that you aren't just content with giving us pictures. We thank you that you want to give us yourself. We're very grateful for this. In Christ's name, amen.